Good morning. Welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chiverton. Your co-host today is Andrew Work. Andrew, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Hugh.
That's Andrew Work of the Harbour Times.
That's me.
It's all about the budget today as we consider John Jung's speech yesterday and his plans for government expenditure in the next financial year. There was a big giveaway or give back with salary and profits tax breaks and a big increase in child allowances. There were slightly firmer plans for a future fund, relief for those affected by the Occupy movement, and money for SMEs, film, fashion, and even food trucks. And once again, a massive miscalculation of the surplus. So what do you make of the budget? John Jung himself will be with us tomorrow to answer your questions and listen to your comments. You can warm up today by calling us on 233-88266. You can email us backchat@rthk.hk or go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there. Joining us in our central studio, we have David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com. Stephen Wong, adjunct lecturer for the Master of Social Sciences in Global Political Economy at the Chinese University. We hope to join by Li Chiak-yan from the Labour Party. And joining us on the line, Mark Fu, external vice chairman of the Youth Committee of the Liberal Party. Good morning to all of you.
Morning.
David Webb, I'll start with you. Good. Thanks for joining us today. What did you make of the budget yesterday?
Well, it feels like Groundhog Day. You ever seen that movie?
Here we
movie?
Go again.
You know, I've been on this post-budget show probably eight times now with the same financial secretary's budget. And each year it's another pattern of one-off measures which seem to happen every year. No policy reform and various handouts to favour vested interests in the functional constituencies. For example, this year, $500 million to subsidise the fashion industry. It seems to be sticking with F this year. F is a big letter in the budget. Future Fund, Fashion, Films and Food.
And food trucks.
More money for films that apparently are wildly commercially successful and so shouldn't need our money in the first place. Mm-hmm. He cited a few of them who have won some minor awards somewhere. No mention of the fact that the film fund needs more money because it's not getting a return on the movies it does invest in, as the Audit Commission found a few years ago. I don't think our cultural future depends on subsidising movies. He does talk about possibly having more food trucks, which I'm sure will help road congestion no end if you park them on public roads. And I thought they'd actually gone in the other direction, hadn't they, and stopped ice cream vendors from transferring their licences so that the number of mobile ice cream vans is gradually in decline. Mm. So maybe there's a policy conflict there. Surplus this year, which has been widely reported, that this is the 2014-15 surplus at $64 billion. If you look at the back of the document, it's actually $74 billion because they're including a $10 billion deduction for repaying bonds, which they issued some years ago. And, of course, that's not what most people regard as part of the surplus calculation. So it's actually $74 billion. And he's projecting surpluses out as far as the eye can see. So despite the fact that he's been a lifelong civil servant who's never run a business, treats this like a sort of for-profit operation where you have to try and book a profit every year, and this is some measure of success, whereas the basic law requires him to not book a profit and to balance income with expenditure. It's overly conservative. He's hoarding public wealth.
But is that a problem?
Yes, because the public wealth should not be hoarded by the government. It should be left in public hands to allow them to do more. Currently, we have about 1.4 trillion Hong Kong dollars of fiscal and accumulated surplus in the exchange fund. Mm-hmm. He mentioned a figure of $820 billion, which is also a record of fiscal reserves. But when you add in the money that's been made by the exchange fund over the years, it's about $1.4 trillion. That's around $200,000 for every man, woman, child and baby in Hong Kong. A typical family of four then has $800,000 if you allocated it evenly in the exchange fund, which would be a sizable portion of a deposit on a home, for example. Mm. Meanwhile, he pleads that there are possible structural deficits on the horizon. Once again, he's crying wolf, and nobody will believe that. Especially at the same time that he's salting away money and allocating the reserves to things like a future fund and the sort of madcap insurance scheme they're planning for healthcare. So, each year he treats the one-offs as some kind of profit distribution, rather than say, you know, how much welfare do people actually need. He says, well, you're only going to get this if we've had a good year. And then he gives 2 months of extra fruit money or CSSA payments to the public, and people who qualify for it, including anyone over the age of 70, gets an extra 2 months of fruit money, you know, even if they're already very rich. It just doesn't make any sense to manage welfare that way. You should pay welfare on a consistent and even basis where it's needed, and reduce taxation if you're accumulating too much money. And they completely overshot on stamp duty. They got $74 billion of stamp duty this year. He's also projecting next year a surplus of $40 billion, but only $50 billion of stamp duty. So he's if next year is anything like last year, you need to add $25 billion to that figure, and we'll have a surplus of about $65 billion in 2016. The numbers, again, are very conservative.
Okay. Stephen Wong, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah. Your general thoughts, first of all, on the budget?
Well, actually, more positive this year than last year. When I start reading this, I think one thing that I think it's important is that he started to realize that government need to take a leadership role in sort of leading the economy to where we are. I mean, given we are, our competitiveness in our economy is decreasing over time. I mean, if you look at, for example, our per capita GDP, we were about the same with Singapore in 2003, and now we are, you know, they are 40% or 50% more than we are. So we clearly are in a situation where we need to have a bit more leadership. As an economist, obviously, I prefer not to have a government to pick winners or, you know, have, you know, wide-range industrial policies. But I think given where we are, our competitors in the Southeast Asia and around the world, I think it is important for the government to take a leadership role. So I think he started to do that. And also, he also focused on a bit more on the diversification of different industry, as well as a bit more social policy in terms of, for example, social enterprises. I mean, these sort of things was not mentioned at all by the FS in the previous years. So clearly, I think his view changes, and I welcome that in a sense that he want to take a bit more leadership in helping Hong Kong industries, and he also realized that there are social values and social concerns about businesses where government can help as well. But obviously, I'm concerned that if you look at where we are and the fact that he overestimated basically he didn't realize that he has so much surpluses in the past 5 years. If you add all those misjudgment, which is around 500 billion Hong Kong dollars in the past 5 years, I mean, obviously, there are a lot of uses that he could have better uses instead of just keeping it or just giving it away. For example, by investing into
squandering it on infrastructure that we don't need, yeah. Obviously, the express rail project. Or
yeah, well, some of the projects that we need is clearly we need, for example, the hospitals. The public sectors are definitely running down, deteriorating. The doctors are leaving, and so I mean these sort of things. This is very urgent, right? Once the public sectors in the medical field break down, cannot really repair it. We used to have the best in the world, so we just need to keep it, repair it, build on it, which is the best for Hong Kong. So I think there are consequences if you miscalculated or misprojected. It's not like you can just say, okay, oh, I'm sorry, I just misprojected because it's so hard. It is obviously hard to project, but if you misproject for 5 years in a row, there are consequences.
It suggests you're just not good at it, I think, if you've got it wrong 5 years in a row.
Yeah, not that it's not just good at it, but also it will have implications to the Hong Kong society generally, because you will have misallocate, we wouldn't allocate enough for the public sectors, which is badly needed. The prime example is again the hospitals.
With all this money getting salted away, John Tsang's sin is hoarding. What kind of, is there any ring fencing going around these funds? Because, you know, in the future, somebody might come along and say, oh, that's great. I've got this big pile of money here. You know, it's supposed to be used prudently, but now it's my political slush fund. Is there anything being done to stop that from happening after John Tsang passes?
No, it's been, and its policy was in place long before as well. They used that money in the Capital Works Reserve Fund, for example, where they do ring fence anything that's comes from land premiums to invest in infrastructure, whether it's needed or not. And so we end up with some adverse consequences from that as well. The whole West Kowloon Railway fiasco, for example, which is now probably $70 or $80 billion of cost. The bridge to Macau that will bring in more air pollution and road transport that we don't really need. And it also creates more pressure on the airport facilities when they should have been looking at creating a network of satellite airports that can offload the less profitable parts of the aviation industry, like budget airlines and cargo transit. They are attempting to ring fence some money into what they call a future fund, with remarks along the lines of "we're going to take more risk with it." Basically, they want to start punting equities more in the exchange fund by allocating part of it to what they call a future fund. But this is not Norway. Okay, there are some countries that have a problem because they have vast fossil fuel reserves, which they're selling very rapidly, and they know that their country won't have that kind of income stream in the future, so they're saving it. Norway does that, Qatar does it, various oil-rich places, Brunei does, although it's all done by the family. This is not Norway, this is Hong Kong, and we need to be focusing on the present and not worrying too much about the future, because the government is, after all, a going concern. It needs to actually reduce taxation income, spend more on certain areas like healthcare and elderly care, and not keep hoarding public wealth the way it has.
Okay, Mark Fu, good morning to you.
Morning.
Hi, from the Youth Committee of the Liberal Party. David Webb talking about the consequences of the surplus there. But Stephen Wong saying that there are signs shown of leadership. What do you make of the budget?
I think the budget is, to be honest, is over my expectation this time. It's like, because first I'm a young professional with a pass, and the tax rebate and the child allowance, these two are the most highlight of the budget for me, myself, personally. And for the overall, it also provides some other, you know, some more, it seems to be more juicy than the policy address that is announced by the GE like 2 months ago. It can provide more measures in how to develop the industry, the food truck, and also those profession design, the funding for, which is also good. But I have two things which I have a very strong opinion against. The first one is the 2 extra months month for those CSSA scheme people. Because I think most of the middle class will have a very big reliance on that, is because not many of us can have 2 months bonus even we work very hard or have a very high performance in our industry. But those CSSA people, they can have 2 months bonus without any really proper justification. The last time that the government gave 2 months bonus to them is in 2008, when the economy is very down, and then maybe this is really some type of relief measure. But this time, seems there are not really the people that is impacted most by the high inflation or something like that. Just release 2 months to them may not be reasonable. The other one is on the relief measure provided for the industry affected by the Occupy Central movement. Which is a good news for all of the industry. But for transportation industry, we see that only the vehicle examination fee is waived for this year, which is around $700 for taxi, which is not eligible.
Yeah, well, don't forget the transport sector is receiving $11 billion of our money to upgrade its vehicles over a period of about 5 years, and most of these vehicles are old anyway and are going to be replaced, so we're basically paying for their next vehicle, $11 billion.
No, but it's not the same policy. The $11 billion to replace the vehicle is for the environmental protection reason, like we need to improve the air.
Yes, but it's a huge subsidy to the transport sector, which pays no diesel duty, I remind you. I mean, they're polluting our air. We all pay petrol duty on our car fuel, but they pay nothing on diesel duty.
On diesel, but if we just look into the occupied essential, the impact, if we want to maybe compensate for the loss during that 4 months, then for other industry, they get the license fee half year waived, which in terms of monetary amount is more than the $700 that the transportation industry get. This is because all the leaks before, all the days before, is saying it waived the license fee for the industry. But it turns out that only the vehicle examination fee is waived, so maybe the industry will be disappointed on this one.
I think they should not actually, the FS should not blame it on Occupy Central movement. You know, if you want to support some industry, you support it. But on Occupy Central is really, really some very much of a lie in a way. Because when you look at the tourist number, actually, the tourist number had not gone down. But of course, there's impact on the several areas of a restaurant. But you cannot say that it impact on all restaurants all over Hong Kong. But if you want to compensate or support this industry because of high rent or, you know, a very difficult situation, not because of Occupy Central, but because of high rent, that's another matter. But I don't think, firstly, the FS should blame everything on the Occupy Central. And actually, to pump in, $100 million into the tourist industry board is really not helpful. You know, one statement by Oscar winner already helped Hong Kong boost their image. So we don't need to boost the image of Hong Kong
by
pumping money.
They're spending $26 million of your money on paying for journalists to come and write nice stories about
exactly.
This. Junket journalism is alive and well from the Information Services Department.
Yeah, actually, that's not needed. You know, we have already got a very good publicity over Oscar, and then they are spending so much money for, asking journalists come over or pumping money into the tourism board to do more publicity overseas. And I don't think really that is money well spent.
Different people have different needs, right? You can't say you don't need, you think it is not need, but if you ask...
I'm not saying that there's no need. I'm not saying that need arises out of Occupy Central. You know, I think those industry had needs. And I'm not saying that they don't have a need, but don't blame it on the Occupy Central. You want to support these needs, okay, you go and support and say that the industry over the past year had a hard time, not just because of Occupy Central, but over various reasons. That's another matter.
So you think this was less about helping the companies than making scoring political
points?
Yeah,
I think they're making only want to make a political statement more than, or political struggle more than that really want to support the industry.
What other parts of this budget do you think had specific targeted political aims, such as buying off particular industries because they can get votes in the nominating committee?
Of course, the whole budget actually is very much of trying to please the business sector. But I'm not against business in a way. If there's some industry that are worth supporting, I think we should support it. But in a way that the very obviously the whole budget is very much of a, in terms of in the livelihood issues, in education, welfare and elderly care and hospital care, all these, the FS is almost using a austerity measure. When you look at the budget to the hospital authority, it's only increased by 0.4%. That is really very much of a big contrast when he's trying to say that we have $50 billion for healthcare insurance, but then those healthcare insurance of $15 billion is not used at all, and then just put aside, but the hospital authority really need the money, but he's not using those money for the improving healthcare, but just setting aside in one of the drawers or one of the safe, a locker. And just leave it aside and say that we have money for healthcare. But then we urgently need the money for healthcare now, today. But he's not doing anything on that.
The top level numbers, I think it was, 21.9% increase in the healthcare budget? Where is that money going to go? The hospital authorities are only getting 0.4.
Yeah, only get 0.4.
So
yeah.
who's getting all the rest if there's that big almost 22% increase in spending?
There's no 22% increase in spending. I think what he tried to say is over 5 years times maybe what he's saying.
Is that the money that would go into the private insurance, the pool for the insurance? Is that what you're talking about?
No, there's the 50 billion that are going to so-called set aside already in the past, but not really used at all, is for the private health insurance. But that already said that they are not going to use the 50 billion because they have already dropped the idea of mandatory health insurance. They are now only going to a voluntary scheme, and that doesn't take up the 20 billion. So we do not know where the money go to in the future. But that's only for the future. But then we don't know what they are going to spend now today. Nothing. 0.4% increase. And for the elderly also, you know, we are talking about comprehensive retirement protection for all. But then the government said that they will set aside another 50 billion for that. But we do not know the scheme at all. We do not know the policy at all. And so the money is just there hanging out in the air or with the numbers there, you know, but not really spent or not really knowing how they're going to spend in the future. Today they are not spending anything.
What about the extra CSSA payments that Mark Fu mentioned? I mean, surely...
But come on, that's...
I mean, David Webb's point as well is that we should be looking at what people actually need.
Yeah, I agree.
And giving that money the
need. But then
And why give a two-month bonus? Just pay people what is required.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You agree?
You know, what we have said
so
in the past...
So you don't think that the CSSA recipient should get an extra 2 months?
We believe there should be a comprehensive review of the needs. We have been calling for that for 5 years. Every year when they have one-off relief measure, we say, okay, you said that they need one more month. Okay. Why don't you really give us the numbers that what their basic needs are? Because what our position is for the CSSA recipient, actually their basic needs are not being met. So if we really want to help them, we should help them with policy and not one-off relief measure.
All right,
but I'm not against the 2 months. I don't think I have the same position as Mark Fu, who opposed 2 months. What we are saying that if we want really to help these people, we should start with the basic policy of the basic needs calculation and not just a one-off relief
measure.
Yeah,
they should end these one-off measures completely. They've raised expectations that they will happen every year. But they hold back in case they don't make a surplus in the unlikely event that the budget actually comes in on target and they can't afford to distribute more money. But that's not the way to handle welfare. You decide what people need. You decide how high to put the social safety net. If you put it too high, you deter people going to work. You reduce the incentive for work. But if you put it too low, people have unacceptable conditions of living. And you set that level and you pay it. You don't then distribute bonuses out of profits, as it were, from the government. That money, if it's excessively collected, should go back to the people they took it from, the taxpayers. And they need to have a uniform rate of taxation and stop messing around with these rebates. Having a 75% rebate up to $20,000 is a very sort of messy way of doing it. It further distorts the progressive rates of tax when we should just have a flat tax rate and higher allowances. And it's unfair, for example, to a couple where one of them works and the other doesn't. That person will only get the 20,000 back, whereas if both of them work and earn half the household income each, they'll get 40,000 back. Maximum in the tax rebates. So you end up with all these unintended consequences rather than saying, okay, it's quite clear we have a structural surplus, not a structural deficit.
All right,
we need to reduce rates to 14%, not 15%.
Stephen Wong, you agree about the CSSA?
I actually agree that there's a need for CSSA reform for sure. We've been waiting for that for a long time. Although I do want to raise one point. The reason why the FS always wrong about sort of the projections. I think aside from the intention as well, I think the difficulty lies on the fact that, you know, a lot of this government revenue comes from the misjudgment comes from a lot of related to properties, related to financial sectors. A lot of these are related.
Isn't it all down to QE in the end? Isn't it all down to
I think aside from QE as well as the credit cycle. So I do believe that, you know, if you look at, you know, in the past couple of years, who actually you know, get more money, you know, is obviously people with assets or institutions with assets. So if the government relies on income on the institutions or people that with assets, for example, in the government, in a sense, is also a beneficiary of this credit bubble, right, or the credit cycle where we are. So, you know, in this cycle, people with assets win and people with income lose, right? Mm-hmm. So because obviously the wages increase is not catching up with the asset prices. So in a way, the government also is relying on these sort of credit cycle to get money. Mm-hmm. And therefore, okay. I think that there is a huge need. If the money comes from that reason, then obviously there's a, you know, you do need to think harder.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut you off because we've got a good break for the news at 9 o'clock. We will continue in 3 minutes' time. A reminder also that John Jung himself will be with us between 8 and 9 tomorrow morning, and you can contact him directly, 233-88266, and put your questions and comments to the horse's mouth and ears. The weather, mainly cloudy, a few fog patches in the morning, windier with a couple of rain patches in the next couple of days.
RTHK. The news on RTHK.
Welcome back. Back chat on a Thursday morning with Andrew Work and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're talking about yesterday's budget. We're going to be doing the same thing tomorrow, but you can do that and help us out when we talk to the man himself, to John Jung, the financial secretary who delivered yesterday's budget. He'll be with us tomorrow between 8 and 9 to answer your calls and to listen to your comments and questions. You can call us then, as you can call us today, on 233-88266, or you can email backchat@rthk.hk. Backchat@rthk.hk. A thought from Mary on food trucks. One of the things, the rather surprising items that came out in the budget yesterday. Mary says, well, with no system in place to hook them up to the grid, they would not only clog the roads but also add to air pollution. Mm. This initiative is a slap in the face to all those folks who have been campaigning for cleaner air. So a few dozen food hawker jobs are created and our hospitals get put under further stress. Way to go, John. Says Mary. Mary, thanks very much indeed for that comment. Email address once again, backchat@rthk.hk. We'd very much like to hear from you. And you can express your views for and against those of our guests. Mark Fu, who's the External Vice Chairman of the Youth Committee of the Liberal Party. Stephen Wong from the Chinese University, Adjunct Lecturer for the Master of Social Science in Global Political Economy. Lee Chuck Gan, Legislator, Chairman of the Labour Party. And David Webb, Shareholder Activist and Founder of Website.com. Andrew, your Harbour Times has got a story about sandbagging?
Yes, sandbagging. We call them the tan man.
What is sandbagging?
Sandbagging, it's like when managers downplay expectations for the upcoming year so they can make it look like they've been absolute stars by, you know, at the end of the year. They talk about how terrible everything's going to be, their costs are going to be high, their revenues are going to be low, and then at the end of the year, when they know the opposite will actually happen. So at the end of the year, they can look like they've done a really good job and get a big bonus. And I was wondering, John Tsang seems to be the master at this. Downplaying expectations and then, you know, posting these big surpluses.
Well, if he was reporting to shareholders, maybe that would be, you know, something to be applauded, but he's not. He's reporting to the taxpayer and he's treating it like his money versus ours rather than all ours.
This is my question. Is he doing it on purpose? I mean, everybody says he keeps screwing up, but is he doing it on purpose?
I think it's part of a long-standing government culture to hoard public wealth and treat it as something that must be, you must protect the money from the public rather than give the money back to the public from whom you took it in the first place. And that also provides the temptation because of the way we collect huge upfront premiums on land leases rather than higher ground rents that I've been calling for years. Mm. You know, we're going to need more revenue in the future as the population ages. If we started selling land on the basis of 30% of rateable value for ground rent rather than 3%, there'll be much lower premiums, less money hoarded today and then squandered on things like the Express Rail project and possibly a third runway. And instead, the money would come in from the ground rents in the future. And so that's you know, part of the problem in terms of the structure of public finances here.
Do you think he gets away with it because, you know, it seems to fit the psychology of so many people and how they run businesses and charities in Hong Kong? Because you look across Hong Kong and it's littered with charities that do the same thing. They sit on huge cash reserves. Hmm. And every once in a while, somebody comes along and says, maybe shouldn't we be giving that to the people that we're supposed to be serving with the charity? And they're like, eh.
Well, there is a lot of money sitting around in the banks. The MPF authority, for example, which is just a regulator, was given $5 billion when it started and hasn't spent it. It doesn't need to. this was somehow, you know, it's been creaming off the income to pay for its operating costs rather than charging the MPF operators the fees it should have been charging. And in charities, yes, if you look at things like the Jockey Club Charities Trust, I mean, the Jockey Club is a gambling monopoly. It holds the monopoly franchise behind a fig leaf of charity, but about 95% of the money that gamblers lose goes to the government in taxes and to the club in operating costs, and then the remaining 5% gets put mostly into the charity's trust, and then very, very slowly it gets spent, but mostly it just gets allocated to asset managers. And they have several, I think it's over $10 billion now of money just sitting in fund management accounts.
Yeah, but the IFS is very good at, you know, sort of, you know, on one hand being very much of not spending the money, but on the other hand saying that they will spend it on the future. So, only doing that, but really without solving the problem. I think Andrew put it very well, saying that they are trying to protect the money from really using by the public, you know, good use by the public, and protect against the public. And that is very bad because, you know, the public really need the money. One example is that on the education front, you know, there are so many young people now having to, you know, pay lend a lot, have a lot huge loan to study. Because there are less seats for, either associate degree or degree that are being subsidized. So if we increase the subsidized or associate degree or degree, then at least they can really study without having a huge loan behind them, and then they have to, you know, repay them in the future. And that again is one problem that can be solved with so much money hanging around. And then the other is, of course, the 15 years of free education that we have been talking about, and all these should be done. But the FS, this government is not doing anything on that, but just talking about, you know, using it for the future.
Mark Fu, what do you make of the surplus and the repeated surplus?
Yeah, I think it is like, if you apply the 5%, if a CFO or something like that, if he make a budget like that or a forecast like that, yeah, I think he get a really big trouble. I think we need to be conservative in some sense, but also we need to be reasonable. Like every year he also make a forecast with so many extra surplus. It's not good for the Hong Kong society. But I think for this year, like for the future, for next year forecast, it seems that it is better. At least he say that there should be like 40 billion of like extra surplus. So this is maybe time for us to think how to use that recurring surplus every year more wisely. And just back to like the point that Mr. Lee has mentioned before, it's on the expense of the government or the budget. I cannot agree that the budget focus is on the business sector at all. Like, because when we see and we look into the budget or the measure or the money that the finance secretary put aside, he put aside like 50 billion for the retirement of elderly in need. And actually, there is news coming out saying that the consultation will start properly like the second half of 2015. So the government is working on it and they are doing something. And also on the healthcare, and we can also see that the government has like, it is undergoing many hospitals is undergoing a redevelopment project, and the government has also set aside like 91 billion on the healthcare and to increase like 2,800 beds for the hospital. It's a large sum of money, and it is where most of our money go, but not the business center. Because you see into the business center, for example, the incentive for the fashion design industry is only like 500 billion compared to those billion provisional billion budget. It is not comparable at all. So it is not fair to say the budget is.
You think we should give more subsidies to the fashion sector? I mean, I know you probably the Liberal Party holds
maybe
the textile seat,
yeah. But maybe like not really like. In terms of like not only the fashion design industry, but of the diversification development of different industries, like other.
Doesn't the Liberal Party believe in free markets? I mean, why does the government spend money on sectors like that at all? Why should it be putting money into supporting the textile sector or throwing money at startups when they should either find venture capital or not proceed with their projects? What about the free markets?
Two things. like the first time I see market. Is it like absolutely see market now in Hong Kong? Like you can do whatever you want, or like no economy can be absolutely free. And
should we make it more free or less free? I mean, you're like calling for higher subsidies for fashion. I find that surprising.
It depends on which industry you're talking about. Like,
so you would choose the winners. You would choose which sectors should get the money and then give more money. Isn't that central planning rather than free markets?
No, I think you need to like have a goal for some like young industry. Like every government in every...
Government
like,
knows best, do they?
Like Korea, like other government, they also do the same thing. If we don't do the same thing...
So other governments do it, therefore we should, because China has done it so successfully, for example, for 30 years, allocating money centrally.
But isn't that the leadership?
That's
the leadership that Stephen Wong wants, isn't it?
No, okay. I think that it's unfair to actually compare, you know, money the business sector get and the public sector gets. I mean, that's just a wrong, comparison. Saying, okay.
No, I just want to say that like, the budget is not focusing on the business center only, right? We all can see like there's a lot of other measures that.
But what you have mentioned about the other measure is not really spent. You know, 50 billion is not really spent on the elderly. It's just, you know, sort of, you know, saying that they will spend. But, you know, they are stalling it. You know, when you look at what the government is doing about your retirement benefit, what they are saying now recently is really a joke. They say that why they need to have the consultation by the end of this year, and not earlier, is because they are waiting for census statistic to do a projection of for 50 years. They have already done a projection to the year where the elderly population peak at 2041. They have already done that, and then it would go down. But now they say that they have to do it for 50 years. But I say, you know, even after 50 years, you are really, Matthew Jung is really, you know, even greater than Deng Xiaoping. Deng Xiaoping only talked about 2047. Now they are talking about 2064. That's really a joke. But they are using this tactic to store the whole matter. Mm-hmm. So I think I have to go back to the facts that really $50 billion so-called for retirement protection, we don't know really how they are going to spend it in the future, and so it's not really there. Mm-hmm. But I have one in an interesting point about the email that we got from Mary about the food truck idea. I know it's really another joke about this food truck. Well, of course, the pollution is the one point.
No, the FS, he sees these things on his travels. And why don't we do this?
Maybe he have gone to New York, you know, which is famous for food truck.
Saw someone selling hot dogs or something.
Or maybe he looked, you know, but the problem is they are cracking down today on hand-wheeled food truck. Mm-hmm. You know, why are they cracking down on hand-wheel food truck during the Chinese New Year's? They are fencing off a lot of community against this small business. But then they say that I want to have a food truck when they are cracking down on the hand-wheel
because they're not cracking down on people illegally parking. That goes on all over the place all the time without getting
they haven't, once again, they have not raised the fines for illegal parking. It's still $350. That's now quite good value in Causeway Bay, for example, where it's $35 an hour to park your car legally. And the parking meters are still maxed out at $8 an hour because, you know, even though that's more convenient than going into a multi-story car park, we only charge a quarter of the price. And, you know, go figure, of course, what happens then is that triads start controlling parking meters and charging the extra difference.
And then they say that they want less car on the road, but then they are not doing anything on it.
Here's something then, David. You started off the show referring to Groundhog Day. You know, in the movie, Bill Murray keeps screwing up, but he gets a little bit better every time. Every time he gets a little bit better until finally he gets it right and breaks the cycle. Is there anything that you thought where there was an improvement over last year's budget?
No, and don't forget, in Groundhog Day, the movie, everybody else does the same thing every year, every repeat day. Mm. His pattern of behavior is very consistent. I'll give him that for, you know, 10 points for consistency and consistently bad, consistently haphazard, consistently claiming that these are one-offs and not something you should come to expect. He makes that point again in the narrative, there's a distinction to be made between necessary measures and one-off measures. One thing we haven't mentioned, you know, that much is the cigarette tax. Cigarettes have got, are now cheaper in real terms because of 4% general inflation and wage inflation last year. Mm-hmm. But the price of killing yourself with a cigarette hasn't gone up in nominal terms. SME loans. We now have $50 billion of guarantees outstanding to prop up businesses that aren't viable and that are sucking up resources from other businesses that would be viable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you keep watering the weeds in the economy, then the flowers cannot bloom, and they need to stop doing that and withdraw that kind of interventionist measure and reduce the public liability for it as well. On the plus side of the loan guarantees, I saw a Legislative Council question yesterday that was quite interesting. It said, how much default has there been under the special measures when we increased the guarantee to 80% of the loan? And the government said, well, we've had claims for $400 million of defaults, but we've only paid out on $20 million. And basically they're tying up the banks in red tape, asking them to demonstrate that they did actually comply with monitoring the loans and, you know, that these were creditworthy borrowers in the first place and so on.
Which is why the bank are not willing to do it anymore. So they're not willing to actually land out against this plan, so well, it's becoming non-existent.
That may be the case, but it's a good reason to stop it, yes. Right. And they still want the mortgage corporation, you know, to behave as if we're in Bangladesh and proceed deal with more microfinance, because the mortgage corporation is basically, you know, almost out of business in terms of guaranteeing mortgages now because of various prudential measures that have been put in place. They will only guarantee loans for properties, I think, below $6 million. Meanwhile, they're trying to expand their mission into things like microfinance. Well, you know, last time I checked, we had a pretty vibrant personal loan market in Hong Kong, and there isn't a need for the government to intervene in that sector.
Stephen Wong, what about under asset management? There's this thing which I discussed yesterday. I mentioned yesterday on the radio, and I do not want to know what it is. Mm. But can you explain, please? We're talking about a plan to allow private equity funds to enjoy profits tax exemption available to offshore funds. Do you know what that is, and what the consequences would that be? It sounds like a tax exemption for very rich people. Yeah. Is that right? And if so, what's the point of it?
No, it's a repeat measure.
I think it is an incentive to encourage the people, the funds come from all around the world to Hong Kong to set up the headquarters and to do the business in Hong Kong, but not really a tax exemption for rich people again.
What it's about is that currently there is a grey area of tax for investment funds in Hong Kong if they are not authorised mutual funds. If they're authorised mutual funds, which means they must be open for daily or monthly redemptions, then they are exempt under the Inland Revenue Ordinance. If they are closed-end funds, though, which are not open to redemptions monthly, and not authorised, then it's not clear whether they are subject to profits tax. It depends in the eyes of Inland Revenue as to whether they are trading assets for profit or investing capital for gains. And that's an entirely subjective exercise, and it's why we don't have a vibrant closed-end fund market in Hong Kong. If the funds involved are investing in Hong Kong assets. Of course, any investment they make in offshore assets is not subject to our territorial tax anyway. So what this is about is a small number of funds that invest in unlisted Hong Kong companies and making it clear that they will not be subject to profits tax when they eventually sell their investments.
Okay, and in the following paragraph, thanks for that, something about corporate treasury centres. Interest deductions under profits tax for corporate treasury centres and profits tax will be reduced for specific treasury activities by 50%.
Yeah, the second part of that is a bit worrying. The first part, I think, is, if I understand it correctly, simply saying that we're going to remove an unfairness in the system so that people can manage their treasury facilities perhaps on an Asia-wide basis out of Hong Kong. But I don't like the idea that they're going to give a 50% reduction in taxable profits just because that's what you're doing, because we don't do that for any other sector in Hong Kong. We don't say, oh, well, you're operating a retail operation, so we're going to tax you at 50% of the normal profits tax rate. So I certainly wouldn't want to see differential rates of profits tax depending on the activity.
Why would they pick that in particular?
Why are they doing that?
It's probably a SOP to the Financial Services Development Council, which wants to be seen to be useful in some way, so they have to follow some of the recommendations that they've made.
So I think for that, the Corporate Treasury Center is part of obviously the building up the asset management business in Hong Kong. So those assets won't be originally in Hong Kong, right? So by having this incentive, so do you encourage more asset to be accumulated in Hong Kong under this so for example, you have a multinational corporation, so their assets are over the place, but their headquarters are in Hong Kong. They wanted to encourage them to gather assets in Hong Kong by having that deductions of the interest pay on the profit tax, right? So but the second part, I mean, as David said, obviously the 50% reduction of profit tax, it's a huge incentive. So
why can't I have a 50% reduction of my salaries tax?
Because exactly. That's exactly my point. We shouldn't do that for particular sectors or types of workers or anything else.
Although the argument then is, you're trying to make the cost-benefit analysis, right? So the cost of the society is obviously you're getting less, 50% of profit tax less from these guys, and also it seems to be unfair. But the benefit, though, is that these assets were not in Hong Kong before, and you're trying to gather those assets in Hong Kong. So do they add benefit to society by creating employment or creating other sort of...
No, they don't. Simply booking assets to
I think that's
somewhere.
A judgment, right, between whether, are there other benefits, more assets.
No, there's no hidden benefit.
But that
here.
Come back to the point that you have mentioned earlier, that Stephen, about, encouraging asset only and not really, income. Awarding, asset accumulation in Hong Kong, but without really awarding, talents that work hard, and I think that's the problem, basically.
What about the future fund? Again, is there anything new? Because we've heard these plans before, but they're a little bit firmer, I guess.
So it's back to the future fund, as it were.
Yeah.
But we don't know what the plan is there. For the future fund. The only thing they have told us is that the future fund will put in more of a high return sector, so that there can be higher return for the 220 billion. But actually what they are going to be used for, we do not know. And we are worried actually that whether it will be less scrutiny by the Ledger Council in the future, when they have set aside a future fund and they have dictate all the usage, so that it can sort of
I don't think there'll be less scrutiny, because you don't have any scrutiny now over the exchange fund.
But
it's completely
we have less scrutiny, but what happened is what we are worried about is if they say the capital fund, at least we can scrutinize every infrastructure they are going to build.
To some extent, what they're doing is...
But what I'm worried about in the future, if they use the future fund to build infrastructure without going through that would be a disaster.
Isn't it the case that they're just basically a rebranding of the asset allocation strategies, right? So it's still in the exchange fund.
Yeah, it's still in the exchange fund.
And if they were to use it as an expense in the future, then they still have to go back to Ledger, just like the process is the same, but the name is different.
So but what's the use of name renaming
exactly.
It?
So renaming it just by saying it's an asset allocation exercise.
Part of this is a hand-waving exercise. He waves his hands in the air and says, I've earmarked X for Y. I've earmarked $50 billion for old people sort of somehow one day, and I've earmarked $50 billion for some sort of health insurance scheme if it ever gets off the ground and so on. And I've earmarked X billion dollars for the Futures Fund. It's a way of excusing the fact that they're hoarding public wealth, which is where we
No, I agree.
Started.
I mean, that's although I think the mechanism is actually very simple. It seems like it's just renaming whatever it is already in the exchange fund as part of the fiscal reserve anyway. But they just lock it up in the less liquid
assets. From the land fund. Mm-hmm. It's from the land fund.
Yeah, the land fund is part of the fiscal reserves. Right, so that's part of the $800 billion that we've got already. So it's just renaming it, rebranding it, and just saying, as you said, you can't. They just put into less liquid assets, so that's all it is.
Well, the land fund ceased to be accumulated in 1997. That was the old arrangement we had with China to make sure that Britain didn't run off with the money as if they were going to.
Yeah.
And since then, it's the Capital Works Reserve Fund where all of the land premium income goes. And has to be spent on pouring concrete, basically. That's the psychology of the government.
Okay.
You want to wrap it up?
No, not yet.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things about this is they're predicting the economy will grow by 1% to 3% next year, but, you know, expenditure is going to be up 10% if you include the fact that it's a surplus. They're going to suck even more out of the economy. Is John Song going to blow out? He's always had that idea the government should be about 20% of GDP. Is he going to blow that number out?
No, we haven't seen that because the revenue also increased more than the expenses. That's the point, right? So far in the past 5 years, the GDP, especially in the past 2 years, the GDP's growth has been slowed down, but the revenue growth has been, you know, more than the expenses growth, which is why we have the surplus.
Yeah, I think you've got to distinguish, but the 20% figure that he mentions is always about expenditure.
Yeah,
but their surpluses that are coming in at around 15 or 20%.
Because if you look at, for example,
of that figure, so
other countries, like they have usually measured net deficit, for example, you know, net expenses, that would be like, you know, in Europe, 3% of the GDP.
The answer is yes. They're sucking an extra 2 or 3% of GDP out of the economy and into the reserves every year. And that's money that we should be keeping in the economy and not hoarding.
Isn't the caution over the surpluses, though, ultimately justifiable and understandable because of QE, it's because of property, because of the extra money that's coming in from stamp duty, and that could end at any time.
But
that depends on the Fed, why they should use this. So he has to be very, very cautious, and it's been going on longer than anyone in the world expected.
Which is why they need to use these temporary profits from the government or the surplus is to fix long-term problems, like, for example, the medical sector and healthcare sector. You don't want to wait until we dried up the...
Well, yeah, you build hospitals, but you can't employ... they are, yeah.
No, one of the issues there is structural. They need to liberalise the medical...
You won't be able to pay for 1,000 more doctors in 10 years' time.
We're not training enough doctors, and we're not allowing proper migration of very well-qualified doctors into Hong Kong because of the cartel controlled by the Medical Council and the Medical Association. They basically make it very difficult for foreign specialists to come to Hong Kong because they have to requalify their general practitioner exams, basically, before they can practice here. So it is one of the examples of Hong Kong's closed shop type situations. And so unless we do a lot more domestic training of doctors, create more places at medical schools, we're not going to be able to fulfill the demand that we're getting, which is increasingly coming from the mainland with medical tourism. They'd much rather get treated here in Hong Kong.
Yeah, even if our second generation go out to study abroad and they want to come back to a medical doctor, it's not possible for them.
So they stay in Canada, Australia.
Can speak Cantonese.
The point is you can't make, and he's right, not to make long-term commitments on the basis of what may be ephemeral and unpredictable sources of revenue.
But there's absolutely there is plenty of scope for rationalization, for restructuring of our public finances, and for setting ourselves up for the future with a better system than the ad hoc one that he's been adopting for the last 8 years.
The alternative is worse. That's the point. I mean, if you actually, you know, push aside, you don't do anything in the public sector, then the public sector runs down in the public healthcare services, then, you know, you rely on the private healthcare sector, which is, you know, higher cost, less efficient for the overall population, right? So the alternative is worse. So, yes, the government might spend more than 20% in the future of the GDP, but actually that's just inevitable, right, in the sense that...
And 20% is not the magic number. We don't know why they have the 20% when the world all over is 30% to 40%.
Well, it's because we don't have an army, for one thing. We don't have that budgetary need. We also have a very compact geography. We should be able to run our public facilities at about 20% of GDP instead of collecting 24% every year because of the surplus. As long as the economy keeps growing, it will be affordable to do the necessary things, but we shouldn't be doing unnecessary things with public money.
Okay, well, gentlemen, thank you very much. Indeed, lots of interesting points there raised, which we can also put to John Jung himself, the Financial Secretary, tomorrow between 8 and 9. That's just from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, not our usual time, by calling us 233-88266 or by emailing backchat@rthk.hk. Thank you very much indeed for that. Richard Harris joining me tomorrow for that phone-in. Andrew Work, your co-host today, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
To our guests this morning, to David Webb, Lee Chuck Gan, Stephen Wong, and doing this on the line, Mark Fu from the Youth Committee of the Liberal Party.